Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, July 25th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. If you have a guest suggestion or you listen to the show and you just want to say something to us, send us an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com where you can learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show That Could. Right there on the homepage, we are starting it up. We have 10 months to raise $10,000, which means we're trying to get 1,000 people to donate $10 each to help support the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride. All the information right there on our homepage. We do have a Twitter account. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. And go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. A jam-packed show for you this week, including our relationship and dating advice expert, Dr. Frankie, coming on a little bit later on. Right there on the homepage on thisshowissogay.com, you can submit your questions to Dr. Frankie, and she will answer them on air. But first, what fun we have for you. Let me set the stage. A few months back, Andrew Keenan Bolger, the Broadway star, he put a post on his Facebook account and he said, "You have to check out this band because they're gonna be huge and you're gonna love them." And I was having a particularly slow Friday night, so I checked out this band and I instantly just fell in love with their music. The name of the band is A Great Big World. They have since signed to a major record label. Their song, This Is the New Year, was featured on Glee, so amazing. And their new track, Everyone Is Gay, there's a video for it on YouTube that you have to check out. It's only a couple minutes long. It is such a delight. I am thrilled to have them here on the show. Chad and Ian from A Great Big World, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much.
An absolute pleasure to have you guys here. We will start with you as we start with all of our singer-songwriters. Ian, we'll make you go first. Please tell us why the medium of music. Why music to express your voice?
I've been playing piano since I can remember, before I was talking. So I feel like it shows me, and I really don't remember my life without music. So I don't exactly know why, but I mean, it allows me to kind of feel connected to everything else and to communicate and share things that I think is maybe impossible with just language.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Now, Chad, your turn, and you, of course, may not use any of the words that Ian has already used.
I know. I feel like music for me has been, for the past 3 to 4 years, has been like therapy, and it's been amazing to have people who are listening to the music feel like it's their therapy as well, and that they're connecting to it. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's a language of its own, and it's amazing that I feel like Ian and I can tap into it, and others can tap into the same pool of energy. And yeah,
nice.
I'm in love with it.
Nice. Now let's do The Great Big World backstory, because there's quite a lore attached to you all already. First, we start out, you are both fellow NYU Violets, are you not?
Yes. Yeah.
So go.
And you are too.
Oh, I'm telling you, and we're going to get some, we already got some pointed emails because last week's show was all NYU Violets, but, we'll keep it going. We can populate this show with NYU Violets. So
yeah.
Chad, you were in the practice rooms, and I do recall how crowded they were. And Ian, you were kind of, I mean, we were getting close to a restraining order with you and Chad.
Well, I transferred into NYU, and it's amazing that you're in New York City and there's so many people and students, but at the same time, it could be a really lonely place.
Oh, yeah.
So I was looking for a music collaborator, and I didn't have any friends, and he was in one of my classes, and I knew that he wrote music, and I had heard that he was going to be in the practice room. He's practicing. So I asked him if we could get together, and he said no because he was too busy with his own friends. And so I literally just went to the practice rooms when he was going to be there and like looked through every small window until I found him and knocked on the door and made him listen to the songs I was running.
Ian was the only friend I've ever had, or person I've ever had, that's actually, like, truly, like, pushed his friendship on me.
I love it.
Like, where it was like, why is this dude, why is he wanting to hang out so badly? and then I heard him play, after he stalked me down, and I was like, oh, this is why, and you're amazing, and we should be friends, and let's write, and yeah, and it started there.
As a former NYU RA, I'm not sure that I told any of my residents to approach friendships in that way, Ian.
You were an RA, I haven't thought about RAs in such a long time.
Yeah. We're here to remind you. So, and then when you guys got it started and you were writing together, it's my understanding from reading about you guys online that, Ian, it was really you who were out there as the solo act with Chad doing all the co-writing and you were out there performing.
Yeah, I wasn't singing. I was just humming, and I wanted to write a musical that was, you know, I was looking for someone to write it with. And then Chad's like, you gotta sing. What are you doing? And he started really pushing me and championing my career, or whatever you want to call it, at that time. And I was doing open mics, and he just assumed the manager role. And it wasn't until we wrote the song "This Is the New Year," the song that was on Glee, that Chad started singing lead with me, and then it sort of evolved from there.
So back in those days, Chad, that Ian was out there performing and you were managing, how would you describe your style there? Were you kind of like I picture you as kind of the Mama Rose from Gypsy, that you're like yelling at him to sing louder.
Well, I actually, he didn't believe you could sing, and the only way I could get him to believe it was to buy him a voice lesson and to force him to go sing with a voice teacher. And so I got him to sing. I got him to believe that he could sing. I don't know.
Years.
I felt there was something in Ian that I saw and knew immediately. I was like, this kid has huge potential. And yeah, I don't know. And then Ian sort of like brought me up after I started bringing him up. It was kind of like this mutual exchange kind of thing. And that's where This Is the New Year kind of came in, because like I started singing that verse, that "say everything you've always wanted" verse in This Is the New Year, when it like it meant the most to me.
Yeah.
And when those lyrics meant the most to me, and it made sense for me to sing them. And I don't know, it all kind of fell into place really organically.
We're the perfect example of like reflections of each other. Like we are, I feel like what Chad saw in me was like what he saw in himself, and vice versa. And when we started singing together, then it made sense that we were, like the sum was like greater. It was a greater than the sum of just our two voices. It wasn't until we sang together that it was one voice.
And holy cow, did that song just become, I mean, let's be clear. I am obsessed with the song to a point that would scare you if we weren't on the phone together right now. So I just want to put that out there. Now, you were writing it, and one of you said, or both of you said, this is like a song that should be on Glee.
Yes, exactly how it happened. Exactly.
After we wrote that song, we both thought that this would be a perfect song for Glee. And we didn't know how it was going to get there. We didn't even know if it would ever get there.
But we thought that once it got on the show, whenever that would be, that we would have been like, we would have made it,
huge
superstars, and our song would be on the show. But it happened the other way around. It was like our song was on the show, and then like we didn't even have a website, and no one knew who we were.
We had just formed our band, A Great Big World. We had just formed that band as the song got on Glee.
And so people are looking you up, and they're like, website not found.
We finished our website like literally the week before.
Well, we have to talk about one of my favorite videos of you both. That would be when you gather together your friends and family, and my assumption is, and please don't pull back the curtain and ruin this for me, that was your first time seeing it when you saw it with your friends and family on Glee. All right, I'm going to pretend that that's what happened.
Okay.
So the week before the show aired, Ryan Murphy, the creator of the show, he leaked it onto YouTube.
Okay.
So that was the first time we saw it. It was the week before, and we had no idea it was going to be on the show until the week before. But to make it easier for you, it was the first time seeing it. It was like the first time we were seeing it, because the rest of the world was seeing it.
Right.
For the first time. So we were experiencing the weight of that was just, it was really heavy. It was really heavy to think that 9 million people or whatever.
Millions of people were listening to this song in this moment, staring at the screen for 3 minutes, it was mind-blowing. It was really mind-blowing.
Would you agree that the two of you had two very different reactions there on that video? Because I can narrate them for you. Chad, I would say, let's say with imagery, was more like, Chad, you were more of the fist pump kind of guy. And Ian, now I'm looking like a stalker. And Ian, you were more like, holy cow, this is enormous kind of sitting there kind of guy. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, Chad, I was having a harder time maybe processing it, and I was just sitting there in awe, and then Chad was like more of the emotions kind of pouring out of him.
It was a great study in contrast. I appreciated that. So right around when Andrew Keenan-Bolger put up that post and said, check out this band, you guys were teasing there was something big coming along, something, and then I got, and I understood it better, something epic. And then all of, you know, like your music disappeared from your website, and I didn't really understand what was happening. Take us back and explain to us what it means to sign with a major record label and how that process goes.
So the label is just this huge force it's like a huge team of people who they really believe in our music and what we're doing, and they don't want to change what we're doing. They want to back us up and support us. They want us to do what we do.
Before we signed with them, we had released an EP of six songs, and This Is the New Year. And once we signed with them, they wanted to take everything down and release it under them, but they wanted to do it like methodically, like have a plan, strategic plan for the release of it all. So they released This Is the New Year.
And then we just actually we're finishing our album, and then the album's going to come out in the fall. It has approximately 12 songs, and it's going to include the songs that we had up.
Oh,
and then
good.
New songs.
Because I listened to all the songs on your website, and then they went away. I would say within 5 or 6 hours of my listening to them, and I had my egotistical moment where I thought I broke you. I was really kind of bummed.
No, it was terrible. Yeah, it was so tough for us. We because it felt like people were truly connecting to the music, and like Glee happened, and we hadn't signed with Epic yet, so there was still more music than This Is the New Year online, and people were totally connecting with it. And then we kind of had to just,
and like, you know, part of us is like the part of us that we had to let go of was, we have this music, it's done now, we wanted to connect with people now,
right.
And like, now is the time. Like, why wait? But we also understand. We understand the label.
We understand why.
Yeah. Well, and it's going to enable so many more folks to connect with you and hear your voices and see what it is that you do. So that's, I support it, even as I was kind of sad in that moment. So you guys, didn't you play like New Jersey Pride, something like that?
Yeah, we played the North Jersey Pride Festival.
That's my homeland. How did that go for you, Chad?
Oh, that was amazing. That was really amazing. And you mentioned this, but we have a song called Everyone Is Gay, which is basically about the spectrum of sexuality, and that you could fall anywhere from gay to straight, and it doesn't matter, and it's okay. But playing that song for that crowd was incredible.
It was definitely a safer environment.
Yeah.
Than where we have played.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Nice. The video, which I have watched so many times in the past couple days, how would you describe to people? First of all, everyone, just go watch the video. They don't need to describe it to you, even though I'll make them do that. It's a couple minutes long, so for you ADD challenge folks, you can palette this, and it's great. How would you describe the making of that video? It's just brilliant.
We had an idea. We had the idea a long time ago, and we were talking with our animator friend, Ro Rao, and he's out in LA, and
we were there playing some shows, and we met with him. I think it was in January or February, and it literally took him 4 months, 3 or 4 months.
Oh my gosh!
It's all stop motion.
Yeah.
All done with like cardboard cutouts and like stuff you would find in like a party goods store.
He said that one shot in that video may have taken him a whole day.
Oh my gosh.
And sometimes that whole day, after that whole day of work, he may end up like scratching the whole thing and having to redo it all because it wasn't right.
And what's really, really beautiful about it is that when you watch it, and we still find things that we haven't seen before, like when you just pause at like a random moment, like something that took a split second that you missed is such a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
Talk to me, Ian, about the responses that you've gotten thus far, too, because we're talking like, you know, 50,000 views at this point and still way, way more to go. What kind of responses have you been getting?
Oh, my God. It's amazing. We were so excited to put it out there because it felt like such an important message that we were just sitting on, like itching to get it out there. And like Perez Hilton put it on his blog, and the Huffington Post wrote about it, and like MTV, and it was just like, the press was crazy on it, and so we're getting our first hate comments too.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that like? We're used to that. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, I feel like that means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Because, like,
people think. It's making others like. We've gotten like comments where it's been like, you know, Ahmadinejad, look what happened to him when he said that everyone was straight, and this is the exact same thing you're doing. And
right.
It's hard because there's so many amazing and like positive comments on the video, and then it's those like few negative comments that really stick out to you.
Yeah.
And you really want to like prove them wrong. However, If they are angry enough to post a comment, it means that the video did something to them, and that's all we want it to do. Like we want the video and the song and the message to like have people questioning like their own belief systems, and that would be amazing, you know, if that is the case.
Amazing, amazing. Well, my other favorite song there. I can't wait for this album to come out. It is Rockstar. I could listen to that, take a ticket and get off the line, that little refrain there. Who wrote that line?
Oh, I don't remember.
You both did. Yeah. That's great. I love teamwork. What are you planning for, I know it's, you know, it's a couple months away, but are you just like over the moon excited for this album release?
So excited. Like,
yeah.
We're getting in the final mixes this week, and I cannot wait to get it out there. And then we're gonna be doing a lot of touring in the fall, so we're announcing dates pretty soon.
Wow!
And then at the same time, without giving, we don't want to give a lot away, but just so you know, and your listeners know that we actually are writing a musical.
You are writing a musical. Now, we talk a lot. You both are as I am I, Tisch graduates, and we actually talk quite a bit about musical theater on the show when we get a chance to. And talk to me, chat about kind of the state of musical theater as you see it right now. One of the things that we struggle with, you know, every time we talk about musical theater and Broadway on the show, we always get emails from listeners who say, I would love to see more, but it's just so cost prohibitive, so I don't feel like I know it as an art form. What do you think is going on out there right now with musical theater, Chad, that people should check out?
My favorite musical has been the Book of Mormon that I've seen.
Yeah.
And not actually for the music itself. The music was good, but it was actually, that whole experience was amazing. And also, we recently saw David Byrne's musical. I don't know if it's still up.
Your Live Love.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was an amazing theater experience. That was at the Public Theater, and that was a really engaging, that the audience was included in the show.
Oh, nice.
And you moved with the stage. As the stage moved around the space, you moved with the stage. It was a really inventive, amazing experience. And one of our like favorite directors right now is Alex Timbers.
Okay.
Who did? I feel like I'm naming these obscure things, but there was also Peter and the Starcatcher.
Oh, love, yeah.
Yeah, I'm feeling like that. That is what Broadway or musicals in general need these days. Like they need that inventive, inspiring, thoughtful approach.
But to go with like what you were saying, like how it's like I mean it's expensive, and like we never saw. Both of us never really went to see musicals until we really started running this thing.
Yeah.
And we both grew up on TV, like Disney musicals and like The Nightmare Before Christmas for me has influenced me so much. And we weren't really too familiar with like the whole thing. And honestly, like not a whole lot has inspired me. We saw Once. And we love that.
Yeah.
We love that show. But it is really expensive. We would love to put out like an album of the musical, A Great Big World, once we're done.
Step by step. Though, without giving too much away, Ian, what would you say that you two will be adding to the musical theater landscape?
We are just writing the songs that we would perform.
Nice.
And we're not tailoring really what, like our style at all. It's just what, you know, it's just what we write, and it might be on steroids a little bit. So, like 8-minute numbers that are going all over the place, but like coming back to like common themes, you know, it's just like fun, like pop song.
Awesome. Awesome. We could use that. All right. So folks can stroll on over to agreatbigworld.com to check you guys out. They can follow you on Facebook. They can tweet at you because you guys have got the Twitter account going. Pretty exciting times for you both, I would say.
Yeah.
Incredibly. Yeah. All of our dreams are coming true right now.
Love it.
It feels incredible.
Well, we would love to have you guys back on when that album comes out in the fall. Do we have a title for the album yet?
Not yet. We're thinking about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will. When we get that title, we will promote it and get you guys back on the air.
What do you think we should call it?
I think you should call it Stalking Friendships.
I like it. Yeah.
And then maybe subtitled Things My RA Never Told Me.
Ooh.
Things like that. I don't know. I'm amazed that NYU didn't make you go to more musicals. I was like required to go to stuff.
We were in the music business program.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. I had no idea.
So we took classes that were in Tisch, but it wasn't like mainly Tisch.
Gotcha. Well, as I said, in a way that would scare you if we were in person right now, I just think you guys are amazing. I think that you are using your voices just in the most authentic way, and I love reading the comments on YouTube and seeing the posts that people are putting up on your Facebook page, because it is so abundantly clear that folks appreciate just how authentic your voices are and how earnest and how pure the music is that you're putting out there. And I will give you a shout out. My nieces, 7 and 9 years old, love your music.
Amazing.
That is amazing.
So, you guys, please keep doing what you're doing. The album's coming out in just a few, and we would love to have you guys back on. Just please keep using your voices in this amazing way. Chad and Ian, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Another year you made a promise. Another chance to turn it all around. And do not save this for tomorrow. Embrace the past.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, it is that time again. It's time for
Love Will Come to You.
our relationship dating advice segment with Dr. Frankie, the CEO and founder of Little Gay Book. She is a matchmaker. She is a dating relationship coach. She's a clinical psychologist, and she is my New Jersey twin sister, separated at birth. Dr. Frankie, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello, Ken. I'm so happy to be here again. I cannot wait to hear these questions.
So many questions. Now, I will give you the choice. Would you like to start out with, like, really, really deep, or do you want to start out with more kind of sassy?
Sassy.
All right, let's start with sassy. Question number one comes to us. The question is, what do you think of gay women who continually get involved with straight women who demand that the quote-unquote relationship be kept discreet, signed, and I don't even know if I could say this, so I might bleep it out, signed, "N***s need to stop"?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Welcome back to the show, Dr. Frankie.
Yeah, geez. All right, let me think about that. I hear that happens more often with, at least in my experience of, you know, working with my clients, with women who are more butch, that are attracted to feminine women. They tend to be more attracted to women that are straight, because they look straight and they're attracted to that look. And, you know, it creates a problem every time, right? They're left disappointed and feeling abandoned and rejected and that sort of thing. So I think it's a bad pattern that needs to be broken, obviously. And I don't know if there's an easy way to do that. So it's very frustrating, I think, for women in the community, right, that are attracted, you know, that are, say, attracted to more masculine women that find that, oh, well, they're not interested in me because I'm an identified lesbian. And so maybe I have some physical features or traits that make me seem like a lesbian, and that's a turnoff to them. So I don't know. I mean, that's just my thought that came to mind right away when I heard this question, which doesn't directly sort of respond to it.
Would you advise one of your clients? So if one of your clients comes in and says, you know, I want to get involved with this person, but from what she's told me, she keeps getting involved with straight women. Would you advise your client to stay away?
I would give it a little bit of a chance, a little bit of a shot, you know, but if it continues to kind of seem that way, I would say sort of redirect your energy and attention somewhere where it's more welcomed and appreciated. You know, I think that it's, in some ways, it's more safe to be drawn to heterosexual women because you feel initially like, wow, I'm offering something different and unique and special to this person here and now in this moment, and I'm going to enjoy it for a while, you know, while it lasts. And eventually, I mean, they're straight, you know, and maybe, a smaller number realizes, well, you know what, I'm not straight, so this is exactly where I want to be. But for the most part, they're straight, and they're using you as an experiment, right, to explore and have their, you know, have their fun and then return to their reality. So, you know, I wouldn't bother. If somebody seems to have that pattern and you're kind of, you've gone on a couple dates and you're finding that, you know what, they continue to kind of seem that way, then I would actually divert and take a different direction.
I think that anytime you're presenting yourself as some sort of alternative, you know, I would be a little bit worried about that. I just, when you said that, I'm thinking, yeah, if you're presenting yourself as, well, I'm Splenda, I'm a sugary alternative to what you've been doing, that's problematic because nobody really stays with Splenda, do they?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Great analogy. I like that one.
And by the way, Splenda, if you would like to sponsor This Show Is So Gay, we're totally open to it. Although I think I ruined that right there. Question number two. I love this question. I love this question. Dear Dr. Frankie, gay women are known to be very passionate about causes such as animal rights and environmentalism. Just how important should compatibility be in these areas when looking for a long-term relationship? And is it worth splitting the dishes over, really? It's a great question.
Yeah, our values are not always going to be aligned, you know? So if one's partner is really passionate about these causes and you're not really that passionate about it, I think as long as you can respect that they are passionate about it and this is something they're committed to and it's not something that totally drives you crazy, then no, you don't, no need to split the dishes. Just know that this is their thing and give them space in their life to do that and sometimes participate in it. Feels good to have your partner there supporting you. And you don't have to be in agreement 100% with it or even be into it.
What about the reverse question of someone who's looking for, like, I don't care what cause they're involved in, but I want them to be involved in some sort of social justice nonprofit work, and they're just not interested. Is that a possible deal breaker?
Yeah, I mean, if it's really important to you, I think so, yeah. I think it would be a possible deal breaker.
Yeah. Is it true that gay women are very passionate about such causes as animal rights and environmentalism? Okay, just checking. It's good to check in about these things. Sometimes I don't really know. Now, the shortest question on the list, dear Dr. Frankie, and I love the signature on this one. Dear Dr. Frankie, how important is astrology? Signed, I think I'm a Virgo, but what does it matter?
You know, people will ask me as a matchmaker, do I use astrology in making matches? And I actually don't. I mean, if people share, you know, if they share it with me and they feel like it's important to them, I think about it and I consider it, but it's definitely not something I use as a matchmaking strategy. So I'm not a huge proponent of it. Do I think it helps sometimes give us some helpful information? Yes. Do I think that we need to live by it? 100%? No. I think it can give us some helpful information, and that's about it. I'm not a super big fan.
What can it tell us?
I think it can tell you, like, you know, if the moons are aligned and the stars are aligned, you know, if you're going to, you know, have this kind of month, or are you going to, you know, meet this kind of person. I think sometimes it can give us information. It can also tell us about our personality. I'm a Sagittarius. I feel like sometimes descriptions of my personality are so spot on.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, there's something to this, you know? And then other times I'll read them and I'm just like, no, this isn't, you know, resonating for me. So
I'm a Pisces. I swim away from danger.
Yeah. So what happens if you read something like this month, you're going to be out and you're going to meet someone very special. So anybody that comes into your life that month, they're like, oh, this is just, I'm afraid of this. Let me run the other way.
Right.
What does this mean?
I will say, though, that when someone asks me my sign before they ask me, you know, like, what I do for a living, I'm so not into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if somebody puts too much into it, you know, and it's just, it really is such a guide for them and the choices that they make in their life and the people that they spend time with and that kind of thing, I just feel like it's just, there's just too much. You know what I mean? They're using that as too much of a guide. But I think if it gives you some information, you know, about your life, like I know people that go once a year or, you know, every few months they go to get their chart read and they think it helps them, you know, it's like they do it in addition to therapy. They think it gives them some insight into what's coming, what they should be aware of. I don't think there's any harm in that.
No.
But if you're deciding to buy a home based on your, you know, chart or to get a divorce based on your chart, I don't know if that would be a good decision.
Which day should I get divorced? Should it be when my moon is rising? Yes, that would be a little bit much for me. That would be a little bit much. Okay, you ready for the big one? I'm just kind of like I'm throwing you softballs until the big one. So this is one of the big ones. Dear Dr. Frankie, how do you really get to know, and you got to think that the word really is significant in this one. How do you really get to know a partner to determine whether or not they are, quote unquote, the one, signed Richard in California? God, there's so many different levels to that. First of all, do you think, let me parse this out a bit. Do you think there is such a thing as the one?
No, I think there are multiple people, you know, throughout our lives that can be the one. You know, I don't think that there's just one person. I think there are people, you know, at different stages of our lives that meet certain needs at that time that feel like the one, right?
Right.
And then, you know, relationships run its course and that person may not be the one anymore, but during, you know, that period of your life they were. So, back to the question.
It's a big one.
You know, I really think it's important that we spend a lot of quality time with somebody that we're considering, you know, being with long term. And that's the only way to really get to know them. And during that time, hopefully, you know, you will be faced with some challenges in the relationship, just, you know, life's challenges, right? Life presents challenges. And it's important to see how the two of you work it out together. It's important to see how your partner is dealing with stress. Because that's, you know, it's so important to be able to handle stress and not just dump it on your partner or not avoid it and have it come out in other ways. So time gives you the opportunity to experience these challenges and observe how your partner is actually reacting and if you can work as a team and problem solve together. And also, is it going to get boring and stale? Like, all right, this is really exciting, you know, the first month, and now I'm just going to, like, you know, go to bed.
Right.
Because this is boring, you know. So when there's chemistry, it can feel, right, really exciting, and this person can seem like the one. And over time, when that sort of infatuation period passes and the dust settles, well, you know, is this somebody that I really, you know, would like to wake up to on a Saturday morning and sit down and read the paper and drink coffee with and then spend the day together and the night together and, you know what I mean, and so on. So just spend quality time together before you decide that they're the one.
And do you put a time limit on it?
Yes. It's not set in stone, but right. I think that, you know, before one can decide to be in a monogamous relationship, I think they need to give it time. So say 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. There you go.
And no moving in before a year.
Is that, that's a thing. And I, can I just say, no changing your Facebook status before a month?
No. Yes. No.
And by the way, I think exactly. It should be longer than a month.
A month is not long enough. You mean as a, to indicate that you're in a relationship?
I think it should be 6 months as well.
6 months.
Okay.
6 months to a year. Something. Yes.
I think Facebook, you and I should write to Facebook, and we should write to Mark Zuckerberg, and they should, you know, do some sort of test
right.
that you can't change it. Now, you can change that you're out of a relationship in a second with one click, but you have to answer a series of questions in order to change it to I'm in a relationship, and it should take 6 months to answer those questions.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. All Let's right. make that suggestion.
So some sort of cap. We can make it a money revenue builder for us.
I mean, I'm noticing right now with us being able to now get married, which is super exciting, right? People all over my Facebook page are getting married that just started dating. I know that they just started dating just yesterday
because you set them up.
She said yes. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. All right, well, against our better judgment, we're so excited about this that I think unfortunately we're making some premature, you know, decisions.
Well, let me ask you, let's turn the lens around to you and I, because I just had this experience last week where I went on a date with someone and then It didn't work out. That was not for me. Let's just put that out there right there. And then a part of it that it was not for me is because I had found out that earlier in the day he had been on another date, and I'm just weird about stuff like that. I really like want to be your only date for the day. And I'm good with you going out with another date. And is that too much of a criteria for me?
No, that's fair. That's kind of slutty, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit.
Two dates in one day.
I'm telling you, right?
Like sleeping with, you know, multiple people in one day.
And he got on a first date with that guy earlier in the day. And I'm doing everything short of naming him. And within a first date earlier in the day, 4 days later, he changed his status to in a relationship with the guy from earlier in the day. And then,
oh my God.
And then the next day he met his parents. Like, this is all on Facebook. I'm reading this on Facebook. So turning the lens around. So let's just say yes. We're so happy for them. Whatever. What does it say about us? Does it say anything about you and I that we're kind of skeptical of that? Or are other people saying, because, like, he's already started putting up statuses, which not in response to me. I swear I haven't said anything. Like, haters gotta hate and things like that. And I'm like, I'm not really a hater. I just am kind of a grown-up.
Oh, my gosh. Does he know it's you that's posted? Does he know that? No. So other people are posting.
It's not me. I would never. So other people are saying something. And so then I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm just a bad person and not happy for others. But then I realize, no, I'm just a grown-up.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, so I agree with you.
Okay,
and
good.
I think you made, I agree with you. And wait, you know, you bring up another point, actually. What about friending? You're going on a date with somebody. You just met them. You went on one date. Do you need to be Facebook friends?
No. I regret being friends. Yeah. I think some people say, some of my gay male friends, and I'm sure, you know, others as well, say that's the kiss of death. If you become Facebook friends within like the first month of meeting someone, then it's automatically just going to turn into friendship and it won't go romantic.
Ooh. Interesting.
I know. Play with that one. See? There we go. All right. We have more questions. You ready? We got more.
Yeah,
This is a big one. I don't know what I would do about this. Dear Dr. Frankie, she has two cats. I have a dog. What do we do? Signed, Pet Distress.
I love it. Pet Distress. It's awesome.
Honestly, this gives me anxiety about this whole issue.
You would be surprised. I get this actually frequently, where, you know, somebody's allergic to cats, that kind of thing, or they don't like cats, and, you know, like, more than 50% of lesbians have cats. I just made up that number.
No, that's a real number. We have PhDs.
Yeah, right? So, you know, if you really like each other, you work it out. Like, you just figure it out.
Right.
I mean, are you going to let the fact that she has two cats and you have a dog be a deal breaker and get in the way of, what if she's amazing? You guys work it out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what do you think, Ken?
I think it's really hard because it's like working it out really does mean if one has a dog and the other one has two cats, I would suspect that working it out means that one of them, if they plan on moving in together, is going to have to give up their pets.
Well, okay. Are the cats old? If the cats are old,
are we waiting it out?
Can you tell them I'm biased? Like, I prefer dogs. But, you know, I had a couple that I introduced, and one had an elderly cat, and the other was allergic to cats. So, you know, they waited it out, and then they moved in after the cat passed away.
Hey, my cats, too. I'm in trouble for a while.
So, you know what? That's really hard. I guess what are your priorities? Like, is it more important to you to keep your pets in your life? And are you, you know, some people just have that, I don't know, you tell me what you think about this, have this cat that lives in the closet, never really comes out, is afraid of everybody, doesn't like to be pet, but they feed them and they give them shelter. And this cat is just like not even really a part of the family.
You're
biased.
It's unbelievable.
Like, what's the point of having an animal that lives in the closet, is completely unfriendly and aloof? It gets angry when you pet it. All right, anyway.
I just want to say, and this is radio, so folks are going to have to believe me, I'm in my home studio right now, and my cat just walked in, which he never does. I think he senses your animosity and your disdain. And
you know what?
And he would like to address it.
Well, let him know. If he is warm and friendly and likes to be pet, I will love him. But if he's cold, aloof, and wants to live in the closet and never come out and show any love, I'm not a fan.
Listen, he's been living without furniture for 2 weeks now. He'll get over
it. The poor
guy. Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, poor guy. But, yeah, you just have to figure out what's most important to you. You know, if the cats are really, really important to you and you met somebody that's great that has a dog, I mean, I don't, for me, it would be more important to find a partner.
Yeah.
And I would work it out. I would just have to figure it out somehow. And I don't know that means get rid of my cats. Why can't cats and dogs kind of be together?
Well,
if
sometimes
you fully
they can't.
Introduce
yeah.
them.
It's
right?
possible. It's possible. Although this is the benefit of having lesbian friends, because odds are you can find one who can take in your cat.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. Because they all need another cat, even after they already have five. Because, you know, they always make room for more.
Oh, man. So, yeah, in a couple of weeks, we'll be doing the Dr. Frankie cat appreciation segment, which will be in regular rotation on our show. Hey, what's your deal with TV? Are you a Bravo watcher?
I am. And I love to watch Millionaire Matchmaker.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
I haven't seen that in a while, but have you been watching? And I can only assume it's just a documentary in the highest caliber. I've seen every episode. Have you been watching The Princesses of Long Island?
Oh, my gosh, no.
Okay. It's genius.
But I've certainly met many Long Island princesses in my time.
It's genius. First of all, you have to start watching it because it's fodder for everything it is that you do, and I really feel like the essence of who we are as gay Jews. But it's all about these women who are 29, 30 years old, who are not married, who live on Long Island, all Jewish. They're all princesses in their own way, and they still live at home because their parents won't let them leave until they find a nice Jewish man. Okay? So it's brilliant. It is also so trashy. Three of them go speed dating, and two of them get mad at the third one because they feel that she was asking inappropriate questions during the speed dating. Like, because she realized the third one, you know what, none of these guys are for me, so I'm just going to have fun with it, and I'm going to ask them how well endowed they are, and I'm going to, you know, just really ask probing questions. As someone who officiates speed dating, I don't know what the official moderates, what's your title during speed dating?
Facilitates,
of course it is, and has carefrontations. How would you address the inappropriate people at speed dating?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've had some really drunk people that I've had to say, you know, you need to kind of pull it together because you're not being appropriate.
Yeah.
So, and then they're very apologetic and embarrassed, maybe even bordering mortified, like really embarrassed. So I would say something. I might, depending on how, I mean, there can be some people that are like more provocative in the questions that they ask, but that might be, you know, taking it a little too far.
Yeah.
Because it's a playful and sexy experience, I think, you know, depending on the venue and the environment. But yeah, I have had to approach people and say, you know what, I'm going to pull it together, otherwise I'm going to have to ask you to leave. But if they leave, it messes up the entire rotation. So that's really not, I don't really want that to happen.
Right.
Because then it's kind of a big headache.
It screws you up.
And I want them to have a good time. So
yeah.
You just need to kind of keep it together.
You have to start watching this show.
I'm going to do it.
It's our people.
It's our peeps.
It's our peeps. It's our peeps. Any new exciting techniques that we should know about that we haven't been thinking about lately? I'm brand new in a new city. How do I even start out? Even though I went out on that one date with that guy who's already married. Yes, go ahead.
Right now, I feel like since we last talked, I feel like meetup.com is booming.
Really?
Booming. Yes. So all the other different ways that I would get information out about my events are no longer really that accessed. Like people are not utilizing them. So now the way to find out about events and the way to find out about how to get together with people that you have common interests with is by going to a meetup. And I think, you know, just meetup.com. So you can suggest any kind of meetup you want, like if there's a really cool exhibit or a movie or something like that and you want to get a group of people together that share similar interests, put it up there. Create a meetup page. I think it's, you know, there's a nominal fee.
Can you specify gay?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes. You can narrow it down very specifically. So it's pretty awesome. And it takes the pressure off. Like if you know what I mean, if you are going to, say, a woman's group to walk around, you know, a woman's hike, or a lesbian hike, you know, you don't have to necessarily say oftentimes it doesn't. I notice singles is not, there aren't that many in the Bay Area where they indicate it's a singles event.
Okay.
I think because it makes people uncomfortable.
Okay.
So if you just say it's a lesbian event or a gay men's event, that kind of thing, people will come out and a lot of single people will come out. So it's a great opportunity to either be the organizer, right, to be the one to facilitate it, and you'll meet people that way, or just to show up at one that's already organized.
Nice. What a great tip. I had no idea that meetup was still going on.
It's big. I would say right now, at least in Northern California and in New York City, it's big.
And hopefully Cleveland. I'll let you know.
Yes, let me know.
All right. Well, just exactly. So you know, I'm still working on a table for us at the Dyna, so that has not escaped my memory. I'm still looking for us to do some sort of showcase, so I'll keep you posted on that.
That would be great. That would be really fun. I'm only going if you're going.
Oh, it's the same. This is a deal. This is a package deal. I am letting the Dyna know. I think they're going to care more about you than me, but that's okay. We're going to make it work.
Every... I love the gay boys. Are you kidding?
We'll find out. We'll find out.
You might be the only one, and you're going to... Are you kidding? The amount of attention you're going to get? Oh, my gosh. Out of control.
I can't wait to bring my cat. We will be doing this segment over and over again. Folks, just strolling over to thisshowisogay.com, and right there on the homepage, you can submit your questions to Dr. Frankie. It is one of my favorite chats every single month. You know I adore you.
Oh, I love being your guest. So fun.
Until next month. All right, folks, not a ton of time left on this week's episode, but still a little bit of time to talk about this week's LGBT news. Virginia, the Virginia Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, my assumption is you guys have heard about him, but you will if you haven't yet. He just said this past weekend that his belief that same-sex acts are, quote, against nature and are harmful to society have not changed. Now, why would we care about Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli? Because, of course, he is the Republican gubernatorial candidate. He was on PBS's NewsHour, and he said, quote, "My personal beliefs about the personal challenge of homosexuality haven't changed. What I want to do as governor is create an environment, including an economic environment, where every Virginian has opportunity." I'm not really sure what those two things have to do with each other, but he somehow linked them together. His comments come less than a month after he petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a lower court's ruling earlier this year that struck down the Commonwealth of Virginia's anti-sodomy statute. So the reason that this is going to be very interesting is because right this second, Attorney General there in Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, is the highest profile gubernatorial candidate, you know, the highest profile politician right now that's espousing these unbelievably anti-gay views. And he's not going to win. Right now, polling is showing that he's down quite a bit and that his comments are not resonating with people. And I think it's going to, when he loses, and I'm predicting a loss, and I could be wrong because I don't know a ton about Virginia or Virginia politics or Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli other than what he puts out there. But when he loses, then I'm predicting right here on this episode of This Show Is So Gay, I think it will just either send a message to people who weren't paying attention or just reinforce the message that at this point in our country's zeitgeist, you cannot stand up and espouse just really, really right-wing views on homosexuality, as he calls it. I hate that word sometimes. But you cannot espouse these views and call it unnatural, against nature, harmful to society, and win an election. That you just can't. His campaign, it goes on, his campaign last week launched a website that urges justices to defend what it describes as the Commonwealth's anti-child predators law, which is what he is linking together with the anti-sodomy statute. So we will see what happens. Virginia, a lot's going on in Virginia right now. A couple days before he made those comments, the Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, a gay Norfolk couple filed a lawsuit in federal court that challenges Virginia's constitutional same-sex marriage ban that voters approved in 2006. So eyes will be on Virginia. I can't imagine that he's going to win, but I guess it's possible. We'll see. We'll keep our eyes on that. From the Virginia gubernatorial race to the Supreme Court, Scalia, Supreme Court, let's give him his honorific, Supreme Court Justice Scalia, he just keeps going and going, and he's not happy. Clearly, he's not happy that he was in the minority on that historic landmark decision a few weeks back. So he told a group of lawyers in Colorado last weekend, first he said that the Holocaust was brought about in part by judicial activism and that judges shouldn't be policymakers, which really, are we making comments about the Holocaust? And then he said, so here's the deal with Scalia, and we've said this before on the show. He considers himself, he calls himself a strict originalist, which he argues that the Constitution is not a living document. He says it should not evolve with societal progress. It should be interpreted as it was interpreted when it was proposed, which how he doesn't see that through to some other really problematic arguments about race, about slavery, about women voting. You know, it's just unbelievable, but he considers himself originalist, and he basically goes on to lament past judicial decisions affirming the legality of, quote, he calls it homosexual sodomy. I love that he still calls it homosexual sodomy because he wants to distinguish, apparently, from heterosexual sodomy. I don't know. I was reading all this about Scalia, and then I couldn't remember how you get rid of a Supreme Court justice, and I looked it up, and you have to impeach them, and it's really, really difficult. So lest your mind go there, how can we get rid of Scalia? There's only been one Supreme Court justice who has ever been impeached. It was Samuel Chase, who was one of the original signatories to the Declaration of Independence. It's been a while. So, you know, that was in 1804, over 200 years ago. So Scalia's here to stay, and hopefully he will just continue being in the minority, and we'll take it from there, okay? Here in Ohio, my home state, I'm calling it my home state because I live here now, in Ohio, a federal judge just ruled this past Monday, to recognize the marriage of two men. Their marriage of these two gentlemen, it was performed in Maryland. And so the judge here has said, this judge ordered that the end result here now is that the local Ohio Registrar of Death Certificates is hereby ordered not to accept for recording a death certificate for John Arthur that does not record Mr. Arthur's status at death as married and acknowledges his surviving spouse. He has not yet passed away, John Arthur. He is in hospice care. He is expected to unfortunately pass away soon, but many say that their couple's attorney, in fact, said, quote, this order is a major step on the march towards marriage equality here in Ohio. So, hey, Ohio, I moved here and they're moving towards marriage equality, and those two things should not be so linked together, but hey, it's kind of exciting. So keeping our eyes both on Virginia and now Ohio. And if you guys have a couple seconds, you have to stroll on over to the civil behavior column there on the New York Times. Every other Tuesday, Stephen Petro, the author of Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, he addresses questions about gay and straight etiquette for a boomer age audience. And he's got his latest piece is called A Straight Man Asks How to Ditch a Gay Friend While Traveling. And it is brilliant. So just strolling over to the New York Times, look up this column, A Straight Man Asks How to Ditch a Gay Friend While Traveling. Stephen Petro just covers so much ground in this one question where the reader writes in and says, how can I get rid of my gay friend? Because we're going to be traveling together and I'm going to be visiting another friend who's anti-gay and she wants to spend time alone. And Stephen Petro takes this in so many different directions. So you have to go check it out. And that about wraps it up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Huge, huge thanks to Chad and Ian of A Great Big World. Just love them. And of course to Dr. Frankie. You guys can go on over to thisshowisogay.com and submit your questions, and next month she will answer them. So whatever questions you have about dating and relationships, she will help you out. She's helped me out. I'm sure she will help you out. Get out there, folks. Go do whatever it is that you do best to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And of course, while you're doing it, please, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Shutters to save yourself.